have, or you should assume and know that we have reviewed the material you have supplied, your argument, and also the applicable case law, and we are ready to proceed. Ms. James, do you desire to retain any time for rebuttal?
2 minutes, if I could, please.
2 minutes, okay. And if you're ready, you may proceed.
Certainly. In this case, we really have what appears to be a very simple question. Are foster parents, or in this case, former foster parents, persons of interest such that they can file custody petitions or other petitions about the children who have been in their care? When you look at the statute, either 16.1-124A or 20-124.1, the statute is in some ways fairly clear. It would appear to just a general reading, especially given it's been decided by this court in Searles that the statute should be read broadly. The statute specifically says that people who, including but not limited to, grandparents, step-parents, former step-parents, blood relatives, and family members should be included, and as well as people who fall in similar categories is the way that this statute has been interpreted several times by the Virginia courts. People such as in Searles who are former boyfriends have been found to fall within these categories. If a former boyfriend can fall within this category, we would argue that foster parents certainly do.
Ms. James, this is Judge Chafin, and in reference to your argument for standing, how I understand what you're putting forth regarding the custody, but when it applies to foster care, how does that not circumvent the entire foster care scheme as set forth in our code?
Your Honor, it doesn't do anything to change the foster care scheme. In fact, it's possible that it would do nothing to the foster care scheme. At worst, from the perspective of the appellants, it would have the input of another very important party in foster care cases, the foster care parents. Though the appellant in this case, the Bristol City Department of Social Services, does not like to have foster care parents at the hearings in juvenile court or the foster care cases, certainly other courts do allow and encourage foster parents to be at court and be involved in part of that process. There is nothing that would inherently have this system fall apart if foster parents who can prove that they have a legitimate interest in the child, and I think that these foster parents in this case can and did, that would in any way cause the system to fall apart. The system is supposed to protect children and help determine what is in their best interests. Certainly the people who have contact with the child every day should be a part of that system.
Counsel, this is Judge Mallory. Let me just follow up, if I may, briefly on the question that Judge Chafin just asked. To what degree does the type of relationship control? And by that, I mean, you would agree that a foster-parent relationship starts off as a contract with DSS. Would that be a fair characterization of how that relationship starts?
Certainly.
Okay. And in Searle, the court made much of the fact that there was essentially a stepfather-stepchild relationship that had come about. So the question I have is your answer that you're putting forth impacted at all by the relationship in terms of whether it's contractual or not, in terms of the broad reading?
I don't think that the broad reading of the statute, and I don't see anything in the case law that suggests that it is controlled by how the relation is initiated. Certainly in a step-parent relationship, where which is one of the explicit relationships mentioned in the statute, that is started by a legal relationship. It's not maybe technically a contract, but it is similar to a contract, a marriage relationship. There's no, some of these relationships are based on biology. Some of them are based on no biology or no legal relationship at all. Like in Searle, he was not married to the mother. He had no standing as a step-parent or a former step-parent. He was a former boyfriend. I would think that the fact that this relationship starts out in contract would actually make it stronger to fall within this category, because there's a clear, legally recognized relationship between the child and the foster parents, as opposed to having the effect that the department argues that it should have. And though there have been, there is at least one circuit court case that has found that this basis somehow invalidates standing in these cases for people who apparently otherwise would have a legitimate interest, there are, of course, other circuit courts that have found the other way and who say, you know, these are people who care about the child, who act like parents. You know, why does it matter whether the parent placed them there without a contract, whether they found the children on the street and took them in and took care of them, or the department did a contract with these people to take care of them? The statute does not differentiate between those three situations, but I think the first two would definitely fall within a person with a legitimate interest. Why would starting the relationship with a contract change that? The only place that, and I have tried to see where this idea came from, I have not been able, and I do not claim to have read every possible case that's out there. I certainly have not. But the only case that I can find that comes close to even talking about this issue is actually a Supreme Court case that is cited, it's not cited in any of our briefs, but it is cited in some of the cases that we have cited previously. And that's Smith versus the Organization of Foster Families for Equity and Reform. It's a United States Supreme Court case. 431 U.S. 816. It was released in 1977. And I can see, I think what has happened is that the language in that case has become confused when the circuit court in Richmond, I mean, here in Harrisonburg, saw it. In that case, foster care families were trying to claim that they had a constitutional liberty interest in the children and in a process that the state of New York had for taking children from foster parents. The court discussed that liberty interest and contrasted a familial, a regular biological liberty in constitutional liberty interest with one that was based in contract.
Counsel, let me, this is Judge Malvo again, but that case deals with due process. How is that applicable here?
That's exactly my point, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I think it talks about distinguishing liberty interest from a contract-based interest. It actually then goes on to say that it finds that the process there was appropriate, so it didn't need to address this issue. But this is the only case that I can find that even really considers the contract basis of foster care as being relevant to standing, where there's not already a statute in the state that specifically says something addressing this issue. There certainly are cases out there that are not relevant here because of the way the language in those states is worded, because of the way their standing statutes or other statutes are worded. Nothing in either of these two statutes suggests that the basis for the relationship should be controlling in whether of a family it consists of persons of interest or not. And in this case, the department has agreed that the greasers took care of this child. They placed the child with the greasers on January 9th. They then removed the child on October 9th, both in 2015. Before they removed the child, the department, about a month earlier, indicated to the juvenile court that the greasers were the best possible match for this child. And then in argument in circuit court on this case, it was stipulated to the court that everyone agreed that the greasers acted as the parents for this child. And even Mr. Stout at one point said that there was really no dispute about the excellent care. There was just some general detail, great detail, there was just some detailed disagreement. But there was really no dispute about the excellent care that the greasers provided to this child. They cared for this child. They loved this child just as any parent would love this child. They performed the function of a parent. And under the case law in Virginia, that gives them a legitimate interest.
Counsel, let me interrupt you for just a second and ask you a question, if I may. This is Judge O'Brien, I'm sorry, about one of your assignments of error, number three, that the appellants lacked standing to adopt the child.
Mm-hmm.
How do you address, your contention is that they had standing to adopt the child. There is a couple of statutory provisions that seem to indicate that the standing or the for to bring an adoption petition must be by someone with whom the child resides. 63, 200, 1201 and 1208. When they talk about the provision, 1201 says the petition shall contain a full disclosure of the circumstances under which the child came to live and is living in the home of the petitioner.
Yes, Your Honor, those statutes certainly do say that. I think the problem is, in this case, there's a difference between standing and whether you have a sufficient petition. Certainly, the greasers could not talk about how the child was behaving in their current care because they did not have current care. And so they couldn't address that element in their petition. But as I explained in the brief, they had standing. I will concede that they probably could not prove how the child was doing in their care since the child was not in their care. But I think it's a difference between standing and whether a petition is sufficient and dismissed on those grounds.
Okay, thank you.
Counsel, you're going into your rebuttal time. I realize we've asked you a number of questions. Would you like to wrap up your argument, or do you want to save your rebuttal time?
I'll save the rebuttal time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Stout, Mr. Curcio.
This is Ed Stout, and may it please the court. The department believes that Judge Johnson was absolutely correct in his reasoning in this case. He found that there was a contract. This relationship was derived by contract. Under the terms of the contract, the appellants were required to do certain things. That contract is inconsistent with the person of legitimate interest. That's what he found. He also found that if the appellant's requests were granted, it would, in essence, throw a wrench into the foster care system and provide uncertainty. So our initial position is Judge Johnson was absolutely correct. But even if he found that a foster parent could not be a person of legitimate interest, in the alternative, if the court would disagree with that, we think every case along this line, and Searles says this, should be dealt on a case-by-case method, and they're all unique to the facts. In this case, we have a foster family that started out with a contract, and under the terms of that contract, they were required to support the child's relationship with the birth parent and siblings, and to support the goal approved by the court. In both of those instances, they failed miserably. Their relationship with the family was abysmal. They asked that Hope be sedated when the family came because she didn't know them, which was untrue. They refused to acknowledge the family at family partnership meetings. They asked that the hospital personnel never mention Hope's siblings. They were rude to the family. Both birth parents vehemently oppose Hope's residing with the appellants in this case. Accordingly, they did not meet their goal. By the same token, the goal was to return home, and they, from day one, our evidence before the court is they never viewed that as a viable goal in this case. It was always termination. And the evidence before this court establishes that. So what we have here is a family that took this child under a contract and then ignored the central provisions of that contract. And we think even if the court disagrees with Judge Johnson's ruling that as a matter of law that a relationship arising from contracts can't be a person with a legitimate interest, in this particular case, they have forfeited any right they had. Moreover, we agree with Judge Johnson, and we're concerned about the questions the court has asked today regarding the appellants. If they were successful, the effect on the foster care system. We believe it would throw uncertainty into that system. We believe that it would severely hamper a department in placing a child. Again, the statute in question, the statute before us today gives the department the absolute final authority in placing the child. They had good reason to do what they did. We note that Judge Johnson acknowledged that the evidence before him, the appellants failed to support the goal of return home. They attempted to change the child's name. And both the department and the medical providers had concerns about the appellant's behavior. And I would ask the court one final thing, to focus on this attempt to change the child's name. I think it speaks volumes about what their real intent was in this case. From day one, this was their child. They were going to change Hope's name to Lily and blot out her entire background because they never intended to comply with the contract. And we would ask the court to uphold the judge's ruling on the grounds that they, in essence, sabotaged the goal that was approved by the court in this case. Thank you.
Thank you for the department, Mr. Stout?
Yeah, that's all for the department. I think Mr. Sutherland wants to speak.
Yes, we want to hear him speak. Thank you, Mr. Sutherland.
May it please the court, I fully support the department's argument in this case, and I would focus on what this is all about, and this is a small child that had great medical needs that the Greasers provided for at the time, and that was solely what the child needed medically. They did not support the birth family. They didn't support the goal. And they were warned repeatedly that that's what they needed to do. To allow the appellant's argument to stand causes great concern, not only for this child, but for public policy in Virginia. It puts the department in this case and in every other case going forward in a position that they may be starting out questioning every single foster placement because it has the potential to become an adversarial relationship, which is what this was from the very beginning. It was a situation that the department had very little choice until they could find more suitable placements for this child, that they were forced to do what they did. But this child and cases like these, the courts deals with a lot of times static facts. This child is growing up and getting older and has been with the new foster parents and potential adoptive family now for 2 years. This is, at this point, the only family that this child knows. The child is thriving. The child is doing excellent in this placement. And not only for this child, but for all other children that are placed in the foster care system, to allow the foster family, particularly in this instance, to have standing to have raised the issues that they raised, causes great concern not only for this child but other children across the state. So I would ask the court to uphold the decision of Judge Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Sutherland. Are there any questions from Judge O'Brien or Judge Malvo in reference to Mr. Stout's argument or from the guardian ad litem, Mr. Sutherland?
No, I don't have any questions.
I don't have any questions either. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Then you have 2 minutes remaining. Want to use those for your rebuttal, Ms. James?
Yes, thank you. As to the last argument made by the guardian ad litem, if this area of the law were settled, then we would not be in this position where we are 2 years out with potentially going back to court on where this child should be living. It might be that my clients at this point, if the case is remanded, will not have a hope to get this child back, and they consider that unfortunate. But they don't want this to happen to other foster care families, and this is a very important issue to everyone concerned about foster care and just the care of children in general. As to the argument about it putting a wrench into the foster care system, as Mr. Stout said, this is a legislative issue. This is not an argument that the court should consider in interpreting a statute. Where he argues that they will have to be more careful in their placements, I think that would only be to the good for the department to have to give great concern to who they place children with. I'm not sure why that's a bad thing. Thirdly, as to the argument about the contract, I think here the department is confusing whether someone violated a contract with whether they have standing to bring custody. Those are two very different areas of the law, and if you get divorced from your spouse because they committed adultery, which could be considered like violating a contract, the spouse who committed adultery still, if it's a step-parent, still has standing to file a visitation or a custody petition. They have not forfeited any right that they had. The issues as to whether or not the family supported the birth family or what kind of relationship they had with the birth family are not relevant to determining what kind of relationship the greasers had with the child, which is absolutely the emphasis of the statute on person of interest. And that is the basic argument here. If they are person of interest, then they have standing. And the rest of this may be up to discussions of the specifics of each case. The rest of it may be up to the legislature if they feel like they went too far in granting standing, or if they feel like they need more involvement of foster parents in the system. But certainly under the case law, reading the statutes broadly as they are required to be read, the greasers had standing to bring these actions.
Thank you, Ms. James. I gave you just a little bit extra time because we certainly peppered you with some questions before.
Thank you.
Do other members of the panel have any questions for Ms. James?
No more from me, thank you.
Or for me.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. James, Mr. Stout, Mr. Sutherland, and Mr. Curcio. Certainly a very thought-provoking argument. We appreciate your diligence, and we will conclude this proceeding, and the judges will go to conference to conclude your case.